everyone. Welcome to the Bee Podcast, where we be ministering to adopted, foster, and blended families. I'm Brittany, and I'm so glad that you decided to join us today. So let's get started. Welcome back, everyone. I'm so glad that you guys could join us. Today we have this super awesome person that's going to speak to you guys. His name is Ron Ratliff. Now, Ron is like, he's one of the best people at Manhattan Christian College, guys. He not only has like taught like different things like speech and this one book called C.S. Lewis. But, I guess it's an author, it's a class. But not only does he do that, but he also runs this library here that we're sitting in. So he is a big bookworm, loves literature, loves talking to people. He's super cool. So welcome, Ron Ratliff.
Brittany, I don't know how I live up to that after, after that introduction. There's nowhere to go but down after that.
No. It's so true. He's being humble or something. He's super cool, guys. MCC's going to miss him next year.
I will miss you all, too. I don't want to think about it yet.
Yeah, we won't think about it. He's trying to retire. We'll see if it actually happens.
Yes.
So, Ron, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay. I've been at MCC for 15 years. Before that, I worked at K-State for a while. I spent 11 years in public education. I have degrees in Bible from MCC, a master's degree of theology from Dallas Theological Seminary, bachelor's degree in English, and my master of library science. So you can tell I went to school.
See, I told you guys he's a bookworm.
And after all of that, I'm also a Catholic convert, now 10 years.
Yeah.
So I've been around and done a lot of things.
You went from the Protestant side to the Catholic side.
Yes.
Although, I have noticed I really like a lot of things that Catholics do. It's pretty neat.
You're welcome anytime. That's what I tell MCC students.
Yes, I love it. All right, Ron. So the reason I asked Ron to be on the podcast today was Ron, I don't know many people who have been divorced and actually want to talk about their divorce. Or maybe he doesn't want to talk about it, but he wants to bring light to some things. Maybe that's how I should say it instead. But Ron is very faith-filled, and he's lived some life, guys, and he's pretty wise. So you guys should stick around and see what he has to say about this kind of stuff. So let's jump into the first question
okay.
here.
All right.
How long were you married?
I was married for 39 years.
Wow.
I was married at 19. In 1973, just a young whippersnapper, and my wife was also 19. We had grown up in our local church together and had been good friends for about 6 years.
Wow.
So that was, and we're married until 2012.
Wow.
So that's how long we were married, a long time. Went through a lot of things together. I had no interest in going to school until after I got married and our first child was coming along. And then I went through 4 years in one degree, 4 years into a master's program, and then picked up a degree. So our family was always kind of, we were always busy doing stuff. I have two grown sons. So there was a lot of things that happened in the early years that were school related and that kind of life. And it wasn't until we'd been married for a while that we kind of began to settle into what would be a normal, where, you know, there's work and those kinds of things.
Wow, that is a long time. So that's kind of like a big change then, going from 39 years to
being single.
To being single again.
I'm near 9 years since that I've been single. So it's been a transition. And now, 9 years out, you begin to... Well, it probably doesn't take... Everybody's different, but you reach a point where life is going on and you're moving that way.
Yeah. So you did say that you had two sons.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How old were they then when you had to break the news to them that you guys were separating?
Well, back 10 years ago, they would have been in their, one would have been in his early 30s and one in his mid 30s.
Okay, so were they shocked then?
Yes. They took it very, very hard. I actually did not tell them.
Okay.
My wife did that. She was the one initiating the divorce, and so she broke the news to them about it. But they took it very, very hard. Even though they were, adults, they still took it very, very hard.
Oh, I bet. Because now I guess you would have to be working through, where are you going to go for Christmases, and where are you going
right.
to go for birthdays, and now you got to go to your dad's, and now you got to go to your mom's, and you got to do both, and it looks a little different.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I think has been positive, is that we still do things together. Even my ex-wife comes to all the family
that is
things.
Cool.
So, yeah, there's no hatred. There's, I think we're friends with each other,
mm-hmm.
which is the way we wanted it. It takes a while to get there, with varying ups and downs to get there. But I think that works better than harvesting ill will towards each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you said that she was the one that initiated the divorce papers. Did you see that coming, or were you surprised?
Well, hindsight is always 20/20. and I really, still to this day, I don't speak for her, would not presume to. As far as her actually telling me, yes, I did not see that coming. It was completely the initial news, and the whole thing took about a 7-8 week period before it became actually that the divorce was filed for. But initially, yes, I was not looking for it whatsoever. I was not aware. And maybe that's, like I said, looking back on it, you always have much sharper than when you're in it at the
mm-hmm.
time. So there were probably signs there, and that's probably my fault for not being more aware of her unhappiness.
Yeah, looking back, and you can see reflecting on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
That arose. So for us that don't really know like what the divorce process kind of is, you said it took like 7 to 8 weeks. Can you kind of like tell us like what would have happened in that 7 to 8 weeks?
Sure. Well, the filing for divorce came at the end of that period. There was a period of over that summer where it came out that she was not happy, but there was not, we weren't fighting, we weren't speaking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
It was very intense conversations, but we didn't yell at each other. We didn't, I realized that this was obviously, there were issues and stuff that perhaps needed to have been talked about years before. And she was in a situation where she was also expressing how she felt about things, and she was the one that was talking about getting the divorce. So those 8 weeks were a jumble of conversations. Sometimes they were intense, sometimes they weren't. It wasn't until towards the end of that period that she did finally tell me that she had filed for divorce, and that's when I knew, okay, this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through those weeks of thinking, and like any trauma that happens in your life, there's a moment when you don't want to think about it. You think that
mm-hmm.
this can't happen. As long as we've been married, we've always worked our problems out, and this will work out too. But I also knew she was very serious about it. This wasn't
mm-hmm.
something that she was just, off the cuff thinking about. But when she finally came home and told me that she had filed for divorce, then I knew I needed to face, this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did the best that I could at the time, trying to persuade her not to do this. I did not want a divorce. I was very, very deeply in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
I had never, ever had anything but a very deep love for her and devotion to her. I thought she was my other half.
Mm-hmm.
She had gifts, she had abilities that I didn't have, and she always had my back, and I always had her back. And so this was a really rough awakening for me to realize that, to understand where she was coming from, but to know that I'm going to lose the most important human in my life. Mm-hmm. She's going to leave, and this is going to happen. And then that next step is beginning the process of what do you do? How do you pick up the pieces of a broken life? That's the whole next thing.
Broken world.
Yeah.
Wow. That is some good stuff. That's all I gotta say. And I think it's neat too that you say that you don't, like, both of you have told each other you don't want to speak ill on the other person.
Right. Right.
You don't want to, like, bring up the problems that you guys may have been facing together. And I think that is so cool and something that doesn't always necessarily happen, and which may can be more pain on the people involved, mm-hmm. all of the people involved.
Well, even though it's a hurtful thing, and I probably our first as humans, our first response is to strike back. But I knew it was hard. It would have been hard for me to do that because of I still mm-hmm. had feelings for her. She was still someone that I loved. So we made an agreement between us that we would keep our issues to ourselves, and we have done that. To this day, our children don't know what all the issues were involved.
We
didn't feel like it was necessary for them. The only person really that knows is my therapist.
Well,
because
makes
I did seek out therapy for it, and of course in order for me to heal, my therapist of course had to know at least mm-hmm. my side of things. And I always tried to be fair mm-hmm. to see, because I was a human. I made mistakes mm-hmm. like anybody else does. So I did not have this attitude that this is all your fault and I'm going to put all the blame on you for this. That's not a mature thing to do. And you have to be mm-hmm. looking yourself honestly to see that. So that's kind of, to this day, we don't talk about it.
Yeah, and I just think that's so, like, that's just really neat. What was challenging about being married, though?
Well, just living with another person, is difficult. Initially, when we first got married, you know, we were young. We had known each other. We'd gone to high school mm-hmm. together. Initially, it's all of a sudden this girl that I was deeply in love with, I'm not taking her home and dropping her off every night. You know, we're living, you know, we're married and we're living together, and you begin to find, and you have to adjust to things. And because she had a personality, I had a personality, and any marriage, you have to find a way where you negotiate these things. Mm-hmm. But I think we really, at the core of our lives, we really loved each other, and we were going to, it was never a thing that we talked about. We never talked about ending it. I think what was difficult in our marriage early on was things that I wanted to do and things I decided to do. And being so young, I oftentimes did not think through implications of things. I wanted to go to school. I wanted to go to graduate mm-hmm. school. And my wife, bless her heart, you know, she was right there beside me. We had children while we were doing this. Mm-hmm. But that was hard. And one of the things I think coming back from looking back on this and the things that I've gone through in the last 9 years is that was probably not the wisest thing for me to do. It wasn't a wise thing. But you look back and you can't go back and change. You can't go back and make it different. So I think that put a strain on us for a long time. And then even after I finally went to work, and we had sort of there were many years of you know, really good things going on, raising a family and those kinds of things. And I think we were very devoted to each other. You both bring things into your marriage that's difficult. My wife had been suffered very harsh abuse as a young child, mm-hmm. and you realize when you begin to live with somebody those are issues, emotional issues that they're scars that they carry from that. And she did a terrific job of not letting those things stop her from having a good marriage. And but those are things that she carried that maybe I tried to be as understanding, but I could have probably done better with. But she never wanted those things that happened to her to be an excuse for anything. And I always admired her for that. And I still admire her for that.
Yeah, because that is really cool.
Yeah.
So, okay, going from the challenges of being married, I'm going to add this question in. What was good about being married? Like, what was some of the best parts?
Companionship. I hope it's okay to say, but waking up every morning in bed with a person you love right beside you, taking a nap with each other, going on car rides, going and getting ice cream, watching our children be little and run around and share, having children together. I saw both my children come into this world. I was an EMT when my children were born, and they, back then in the 70s, they wouldn't allow dads in the delivery room, but they let me in because I was a paramedic.
That's awesome.
They knew I wouldn't pass out on the floor. So it's a whole wide range of things. We laughed together, we cried together, we had dreams together. She always had my back. I always had her back. I trusted her implicitly. I trusted her wisdom. I wanted it. And because I always saw her as a completion, we never wrangled about headship in our family. I always tried to get her. I thought we both made a good team.
That's awesome.
So those are the things that you remember and the things that you miss.
Yeah.
And it's gone.
I think that's what it sounds like marriage is about. I'm not married, obviously. I'm single. But
I'm taking notes on this.
I am taking notes because I feel like that's what the joys of what marriage is about is living life together.
Mm-hmm. And even those difficult times when you have a fight is...
Sometimes brings you closer.
Yes. Who's going to humble themselves? And we had a rule that we followed pretty closely is the scriptural admonition... Don't let the sun go down on your anger. We always had a thing that we tried to not go to bed angry with each other.
My Sunday school teacher, back in a Bible study that I was a part of, Connie Schwartz, if you're listening, shout out to you. She would tell us, I think it was Connie Schwartz. If it's not, I'm sorry. But she would tell us how her and her husband did the same exact thing. And she goes, there was some nights.
Yes.
Which I just thought that was so cool.
Yes.
Just hearing.
We didn't always, wasn't always 100%, but we usually.
They're pretty close.
Yeah.
That's still neat,
We
though.
Didn't like that tension between us. It wasn't natural. And we both needed to be on the same page with each other. Mm-hmm. So that's what we worked for anyway.
That's awesome. So knowing all these things, what was hard about signing the papers and saying goodbye?
Well, in our case... our case was maybe unusual in that we came to agreements about things.
Mm-hmm.
She filed for the divorce. We settled on all the property, everything. So it was just a 60-day waiting period for that. During the 60 days going up to that, and I didn't have to sign anything except the property agreement that we went to. And I didn't have to be in court. It's in many ways horrifically simple. it's an easy thing to do, but it is also a sword being run through your heart.
Mm-hmm.
As the weeks progress towards that 60-day period, you go through an avalanche of emotions. One day I needed to keep busy. The college was terrific to me. They told me if there's ever a day that you feel like you can't come in, don't come in. And don't take it as sick leave or vacation. Just do what you need to do. Well, coming to work is what I needed. I needed to be busy. I needed normalcy. Mm-hmm. It was going home that was the tough thing. My cat was my counselor when I wasn't seeing my counselor.
Emotional support
animal. He always seemed to know what I needed. So there was this conflict going on. And I was also in therapy. I was in a divorce recovery group that was terrific. So I had a team of people around me that were praying for me, that would check in up on me. So I had a lot of really good support. And I remember reaching a point in that where I was anxious for the day to get here. Mm-hmm. It's coming. We had talked about reconciliation. I threw out the invitation. You know, we can work this out. And she had decided no, it's in the process. And I was resigned to that. So once you reach that resignation to that, you're ready for the day to get here. Get it mm-hmm. over with. On the day that it actually went to court, the college, bless their heart, I had been told, do not show up for work that day. Go mm-hmm. do something that you want to do. Go somewhere, do something. So one of my cousins and I met up. She lived west of here a ways, and we went to Wichita and picked up another cousin that lives outside Wichita, and we spent the day together.
That's so awesome.
I went to Eighth Day Books and spent a couple hours browsing books. We went out and ate. So I surrounded myself that day with people that loved me. And
I could comfort you.
Yes. And so that was that. Does that kind of help?
Yeah. No, I think that answered the question really well.
Every day's a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. I had good days. I had days when I was in the trash can emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's fair. You said 39 years with
right.
the person you loved
yeah.
more than anyone else. Mm-hmm. So I think that's fair to say you had
yes.
rough
yes.
days and also maybe okay days.
Yeah. Yeah.
But being 9 years now from it, what do mm-hmm. do you miss anything?
Sure. You're always going to miss the things that I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Now we would be much older, in our 60s. I'm 66 now. So from those 9 years to now, we would have begun to age, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I had bariatric surgery 2 years ago. I was dealing with some health issues. I was overweight. So I had bariatric surgery, took care of my health issues that I had, and also dropped about 80 pounds. So I had to go through that pretty much by myself. My kids, of course, were there if I needed them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this thing that everything I do now, I do it alone. I still have triggers. There'll be things mm-hmm. that will set me off. The thing that I have to really guard against is I have a rule of thumb that my rule of thumb is I don't suck my thumb. I work really hard not to feel sorry for myself mm-hmm. because once you start down that road, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So I try really, really hard to stay positive. But I will have moments, especially at night, not long before I go to bed, where I'll have a trigger that will hit me and I realize I'm alone.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in my house since I came home from work, 6 hours or so, and I haven't talked to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm by myself. And that is really Screwtape's attempt to get me into getting me down.
Yeah.
So sometimes it works. Sometimes it's like I've been kicked in the stomach and the wind gets knocked out of me. And other times I'll just say, no, I'm
yeah.
not going there.
Lies
it's the loneliness. I haven't dated. Likely I won't. I'll be single for the rest mm-hmm. of my life. Although I jokingly, my children early on, they're really great. They would call me and ask me how I was doing, and my oldest son would say, "How's your love life, Dad?" This is a year or so after, and we would laugh about it. One time he called me and asked me that question, and I said, "Well, everything's kind of on hold because I've decided to wait for a rich widow." So that became sort of the my punchline for, you know, I'm holding out for a rich widow. So there's just things that you become to have peace with things. My prayer has been from day one, Lord, I didn't ask for this, but but I recognize that even the worst things of our life are a gift from you. Do with my life what you want. You know, if I'm to find a companion again, that's fine. But I've come to the point where I can say, if I'm to be single for the rest of my life, so be it. Your mm-hmm. will be done. And there's real peace in that. It's hard to pray that prayer.
Yeah.
But there's no other way you're going to have anything of value, I think. And you're going to spend your life living in the past or hoping for things that may not happen. And you miss out on the fact that Christ is here with you right now. And we are called to be faithful to each day that God gives us. So that's kind of how it is for me. Everybody's different. You know, everybody has different things. I've had friends who became single around the time I did. And with a couple of years, they were married again. You know, that hasn't been my story. And that is maybe what God has been working on me to give me, to make me surrender my will. Mm-hmm. You and I were talking before we started that something like this breaks you. It's bound to, but you discover after a while that brokenness can be broken in two, or it can be a brokenness that breaks you open. And if you allow yourself to be broken open, then you allow God's grace and mercy to work through your life, and it changes you. And I'm certainly a much different person than I was 9 years ago. Much mm-hmm. different person, and I'm grateful for that. And I may not have gotten to this place if that had not happened to me.
Yeah.
So
the way God works is kind of cool. It sucks sometimes.
Yes.
but I think that's just because we live in the broken world, and so because we live in the broken world, bad things happen, hurt happens,
right.
And then God's like, all right, so I see you're hurting. This sucks. I don't like it either. Let me help you out.
Right. There's a really terrific movie that has helped me immensely just in the last year and a half called A Hidden Life. And it's based on a true story about a peasant farmer in Austria who resisted Hitler. He was a devout Catholic, and his wife, and they had three daughters, and his name was Franz Jägerstätter. And the movie's called A Hidden Life. And there's a scene in that movie when he refused to swear allegiance to Hitler because he saw the Nazis as evil. It was an unjust war they were raging, and he refused to have anything to do with it. And of course, he was executed for it. The Catholic Church beatified him in 2007. But there's a scene in the movie where he's talking to a painter, a man who restores paintings in this beautiful church. And as the painter talks about, he says, I paint the Christ that makes people comfortable. I don't create followers. I create admirers. And his hope is that one day he will reach the point where he will paint the true Christ. That's what he talks about. But he has a line in there that really hit me hard. And I have it up here on my computer. He says, Christ's life is a demand, and we don't like to be reminded of it. And that line hit me so hard, and the whole film hit me so hard about what does Christ call us to, and are we willing to say, okay, Lord, this is not what I would have chosen for my life. I'm sure Franz and Fanny did not anticipate what they went through, and his wife never remarried, and she raised three daughters. But God remembers, and God sees what we do. But we have to remember that Christ's life is a demand, and we have to be willing to say, Lord, your will be done.
And fully surrender to it.
Yes.
Yes, for sure. Okay, I'm going to maybe backtrack here and then
all
go
right.
on to the next
all
question
right.
that might actually
Fire
go
away.
With this. So has there been anything good that came out of this divorce?
Well, I leave that into God's hands. I can't control, certainly I can't control what my ex-wife does. We have a good relationship with each other. We're friends. We don't see each other very much or communicate. But when we do, of course, we have children and grandchildren. So, I have to kind of look at things as how it relates to myself. And there has been good that's come out of that. Like I mentioned, I'm different in a lot of ways. I'm mm-hmm. much more giving I think I am, than I used to be. Much more willing to let go of what I want and look for opportunities to help people. I live in a house full of books, and I have no greater joy than giving those books to people. If somebody wants to have coffee with me, just dropping whatever I'm doing and doing that and listening to what they have to say, that has been a blessing beyond imagination. I had a friendship with, part of this, I think the timing of my divorce coincided with my becoming friends with a man who knew C.S. Lewis. And Walter was a wonderful, marvelous friend who helped me into the Catholic Church. He mentored me that way. But Walter also taught me a lot about giving your life away. And mm-hmm. he had learned that from Lewis. He lived with Lewis in the last summer of Lewis's life, and they had corresponded with each other for a number of years. And Walter passed away this last December, and it has been very hard on me. I last saw him almost 3 years ago, and the last email I had from him was Valentine's Day last year, and then his health declined rather rapidly. And my friendship with him, and subsequently to the divorce, was emulating his way of giving his life away. And he was so busy, and yet he took time. He became friends with me. You know,
yeah.
I grew up in Junction City, Kansas. How is it that a man who knew C.S. Lewis would become my friend and invite me to come and see him?
He's in England, isn't he?
Yes, he lives.
And you're from little old America.
Yes. But I was able to go see him three times over a course of years. So those things are sort of what I see as the aftermath of me becoming, hopefully, in a small steps, much more gregarious, much more giving, much more of seeing Christ in other people and wanting to be a part of somebody, no matter what they might need. And without the idea of doesn't even enter my mind, what do I get out of this? And part of me 20, 30 years ago would have probably thought of that. Now, it makes me nauseous to think I would even have thought about things like that. So I like to think that that's been something that has changed in me, that's been for the good.
That is really cool. Seems like you've grown a lot. So how would you say that your relationship with Christ has grown since you've been single?
Wow. It's deepened immensely. It's kind of a two-pronged thing. I mean, there used to be, years and years ago, when I was a student here at MCC, I remember hearing it on the radio about an off-Broadway play that was being performed in New York, and it was called You Can't Box with God, Your Arm's Too Short. And I've never forgotten that. So there was within to some extent, sort of boxing with God, which of course is impossible, and identifying with Jacob when he wrestled with God and had his hip put out of place. There's that where I was able to look at, you know, to say to God, this is not funny, you know. But you also find out that God has a sense of humor and that his love for me is beyond what I've ever desired, and that being a Catholic, we're very, very big on that suffering is redemptive, mm-hmm. that we can take our pain and the things we suffer and put it on the cross with Christ. And so Paul talks about how our sufferings complete the work of Christ. Doesn't add to it, but there is a sense in which our suffering and the things we go through in life has a redemptive quality to it when we offer it up to Him. And that means we have to let go of it, that we have to continually. And so my prayer life deepened, my devotion to Christ, my devotion to the church deepened. And so it's love, knowing that God has a plan in this and He's going to see me through it. But you do that each day. And there were times early on in the months following the divorce where I would go to bed at night, and I didn't do this very many times, maybe three or four times. I would go to bed and I would tell God, I need something tomorrow. I'm running on empty, and I need something. Please give me something tomorrow. I don't care what it is, but I need to hear from you. Every single time I prayed that, the very next day, a friend would call me. I would get an email from Walter completely out of the blue.
Isn't
I had not shared with
ever.
Him anything about what I was going through. And he would address exactly. Now, how he knew that, I have no idea. But every time I prayed that prayer the next day, God delivered.
God is super cool like that.
Yeah.
I know he's done that in me, in my life, too. Mm-hmm. There's been some times I'm like, God, I'm being told lies. I need some truth.
Yes.
Like, please speak some truth. And then at that moment, somebody that is one of my, like, best friends would be right there. Like, in an hour that they probably should be asleep, typically asleep, they were there.
Makes the hair on your neck rise, doesn't it?
Yes. Or, like, other people, too, that, like, I know can speak truth into me do at the very instant that I say I need it.
Reduces me to tears.
Of course, the God is so awesome.
Yes, sure.
I'm glad
is.
I'm not the only one he does that for. Everybody needs a little bit of Jesus.
Yes.
But okay, I have this question because I'm pretty sure that this is in the Bible. I don't actually know for sure. I do go to Bible school, guys. But I'm not graduated yet. So
yeah,
I still got to learn some things.
That's right.
I don't graduate till May. So
You've got 6 weeks.
I'm still a student. I still got to learn. So isn't there something about in the Bible how, like, people shouldn't get divorced?
Yes,
okay,
there is.
You speak in on that.
Well, Jesus deals with this a couple times, at least, in the Gospels.
Mm-hmm.
When the scribes and Pharisees came to him and they asked him the question about divorce. He said, Moses granted divorce. He said, and they asked him, what do you say about that? And Jesus said, it's because of the hardness of your hearts that Moses allowed divorce. But from the beginning, it was not so. So Jesus's teaching is that no, marriage is for life.
Mm-hmm.
Divorce is, it says that, I think, in Malachi, God hates divorce. Mm-hmm. It is something, C.S. Lewis uses the analogy of divorce as it being like chopping up a living body.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a business agreement that is canceled. Mm-hmm. It's much deeper than that, because the husband and wife are one flesh.
Mm-hmm.
You have been joined physically with another person, and that often usually produces children. So you just don't walk away from that. And so that's why God's standards are very high. He calls us to, and the disciples said, good heavens, if that's the standard you're setting, who can be married? And Jesus doesn't say, oh, it's okay. Jesus says, count the cost. This is the standard. Of course, divorce happens.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's out of our control. Sometimes there are situations where one or the other spouse, and sadly, it's often women, are in an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think God calls us to stay in a relationship like that, obviously.
Yeah.
I would not say that at all. And I can't speak for Protestant groups, but the Catholic Church has the same standards about marriage, very strong standards, but the Catholic Church also recognizes that sometimes divorce happens. And so within the Catholic Church, there are, for me, I went through a divorce. I am now called to live a celibate, single life.
Mm-hmm.
The Catholic Church does have a procedure that you can go through, and I went through it, where they look at your marriage. When you got married, what was going on? Did you both understand what you were going through when you got married? They're not really interested in who filed for divorce or the situation around it. That does play into this. But I went through it mainly because I wanted healing from it, and it was immensely healing for me. It really helped me see my weak spots in my life and in my marriage and things that I could have done better. But the church tells me, you can't go back and change anything, Ron. Go to confession if you need to and move on with your life. I was granted the permission to remarry if I ever should. That doesn't happen to everybody. Mm-hmm. But so the Catholic Church at least holds to a high standard of marriage. But there's also grace. Mm-hmm. And we must understand that there is grace in that. And I became a Catholic voluntarily. I live under that. I cannot marry. If I wanted to marry somebody who was divorced, if I fell in love with a woman who was a widow, I would be free to marry her. If I was to fall in love with a woman who was divorced, she would need to go through the process that I went through, even though she may not be Catholic, in order for her to be granted permission. So there are structures within mm-hmm. within that. Protestant groups handle it differently. In some Protestant groups that I was with, they obviously see divorce as a very grave, you know, situation, but oftentimes don't have strict rules about remarriage. So that's kind of a long answer to the question.
Really quick, when we talk about Protestant groups, we're talking about like all the other, like we're talking about multiple church denominations.
Right.
Is what it's and for those of you who don't know.
Yeah,
it's just like
and even independent churches that aren't connected with any ecclesial body.
They're basically it's just an umbrella for Jesus followers.
Yes, that's a
good is what I would say for those of you who don't know what we mean when we say Protestant.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
I just wanted to
Thank
say that really
that.
Quick. Because I know you and I were knowing what we're talking
yes,
about, but for anybody
don't assume,
listening,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, I do that. I assume too much. Does that answer the question?
I think it does.
Okay.
I had another question I was going to ask you based off that, and now I lost it because I was talking about Protestants. how did you wrestle then based off what Jesus is teaching? Because I know you're very mm-hmm. you're very familiar with the Bible. So based off of Jesus' teaching, how did you wrestle with that then?
Well. In my case, anyway, I did not want the divorce,
mm-hmm.
and I did not participate in it, other than agreeing to the property settlement in it. So, and I think all Christian groups, and the Catholic Church does this, the Catholic Church recognizes that sometimes there is what they will call the innocent party, the party that does not want a divorce, fights to save the marriage, but mm-hmm. In our culture in America, divorce is pretty easy to get, mm-hmm. and it's for just about any reason, irreconcilable differences or things like that. And again, I'm not speaking to cases where there's abuse or there's been unfaithfulness or, you know, stuff like that. So in my case, anyway, it did not affect my standing with the church. What I am called to do now is I have to live faithfully, a celibate life. So, and I do. That is my calling right now in life, and I have no problem with that. I miss companionship. You know, I miss mm-hmm. those kinds of things. But my commitment to Christ comes first. Christ's life is a demand,
mm-hmm.
and I do my hardest to obey that.
Yeah, for sure. I think just kind of going off of that, guys, I would say divorce is a product of the broken world. Mm-hmm. It's not something we want to go through. It's not something that, like, there's teachings on it for a reason, but there's also grace in it because
yes.
we're broken humans living in a broken world that doesn't function properly.
Right.
And I always like to use a clock analogy. It's like you have a clock on the wall, and then like the clock, and it tells time perfectly every hour. It's like perfect. And then it breaks, and it's cracked, and it doesn't tell the right time, but yet you put it on the wall and you still try to use it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what our world is like. It's broken, and yet we try to still live in it. And so, things like this happen, and it's not necessarily anyone's fault, and God still loves people through it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's,
mm-hmm.
I think you covered it really well, but like talking about how you went through it as a Christian, because there is teachings in that, and we want to know, like, well, is this really bad? Is this, like, okay, can we do it? It's needed?
It should really maybe give us pause when we read, you know, for young couples thinking about getting mm-hmm. married, they need to really ponder Jesus' words about marriage and mm-hmm. the importance of it. God holds it in a very high, very high esteem. So
yeah.
It is not to be entered into lightly. A lot of pastors say that at a wedding. You need to be really aware of what you're doing. And in today's culture, it's so easy to just move in together or, you know, live together and not have marriage, or marriage is something that's very casual. But as Christians, we are held to a higher standard than mm-hmm. that. And
living,
and there's always two sides to each. Yeah, and there's always two sides to each story, you know, to each marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to be very understanding of that.
Yes.
Because I certainly was not anywhere near perfection.
Yeah, Dr. York likes to tell us how marriage is a covenant.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Big covenant. Those are big words, big church words right there.
Yes.
So I have two more questions for
okay.
you.
Okay, fire away.
How have you seen God work through this marriage and divorce?
Well, I think family that have seen me go through this have, hopefully they have seen me exercise grace, exercise tolerance, and I've been very emphatic about I didn't want people to hate my ex-wife ever. Mm-hmm. I don't want that for my friends. I don't want it in my family. And then I think that's been the case. I think there's been some healing from that, and I think that's been a good thing. I can't speak for my ex-wife. She has her life. So I would not presume to answer that on her behalf. I think my children have come around to accepting that this has happened, and they certainly see themselves as having their faults through things also. But hopefully, the thing that I hope for most to come out of this is that I'm not responsible for anybody but myself, and I hold myself to a standard where I try to learn humility. I try to practice humility, but I also try to safeguard myself from putting myself down, belittling myself. And I think some people may struggle with that after something like this, is that they mm-hmm. just see themselves as trash or junk, that
they're not
they're not worthy to be loved. And that's, yeah, it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, hopefully I've come to a better balance about how I view myself about things. So it's all one day
it
at a time.
It sounds like it. You at least got the intellect of it. Whether the belief is there or not, you at least know.
Yeah, God will be the one to decide those kinds of things, won't he?
But that's super cool.
Appreciate that.
So is there anything else that you would like to share to the people listening to
you? Just if this has happened to somebody that's out there, or they're in the process of doing this, Don't carry this burden by yourself. I thought, well, you know, you complimented me that I have this intellect, and I quickly learned that my intellect was not going to get me through this.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that nobody, until they go through it, knows the enormity of this emotionally. So don't do this by yourself. My way may not be everybody's way, but I think it's important to get professional help. Swallow your pride and realize you can't do this yourself. I realized that early on, that I need, and I did, I was, the college asked me to do one of two things, either go into counseling or get with a divorce recovery, and I did both, and both of them were immensely helpful to me. And as a matter of fact, I still see my therapist twice a year as sort of a checkup.
That's super cool.
To see how I'm doing, and it's just really good to reconnect with her. So, and then the other thing is to have friends around you, faithful mm-hmm. friends. And you don't want yes people. You don't want people who are going to feed the anger that you're going to have. Mm-hmm. You need people who are going to tell you what you need to hear. And that's, you know, think in terms of the famous people like Elvis Presley, whose life devolved into drug abuse, and because he didn't have people around him that would tell him no. Mm-hmm. He had yes people. And I actually had a friend early on in the process who expressed anger towards my ex-wife, and I had to gently tell him, if I have forgiven you, her, you have to forgive her too. Mm. He said, thank you. And I said, you know, I need you to be objective. So, you know, so have people around you that are going to tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear.
Friends are good.
Yeah, they really are.
I love them.
The Proverbs say, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Mm. And sometimes we need those wounds in our life to snap out of it. Kind of moments.
Yes.
So those are the things that I would recommend if somebody has gone through it or newly thrown into this oven of turmoil. Those are things that I recommend they do.
That's good advice. I told you guys that Ron's wise and has good advice. So followed through.
I'm still here. You know, I still laugh and yeah. Each day is a blessing. Each day is a gift. And even in the midst of the worst day you may be having, try. My prayer oftentimes was, Lord, I'm in this tiny little boat on this tumultuous sea. Don't forget me. And sometimes that was my prayer. Just don't forget me. And he didn't. He's going to let you. He's not going to pull you out of that, but he'll see you through it.
He's a pretty good guy that
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
Pretty good guy.
Yeah. So that's the best I can say.
Well, thank you. And thank you for saying yes to come on the podcast.
This is actually the first time anybody's ever really asked me about this in 9 years. So I thought, yeah, it's time. I think I could talk about this.
Yeah. I asked. He was so funny when I asked him. I said, hey, Ron. I don't know anybody really divorced that would be willing to talk about this subject in a Christ-like manner. Could you? And he's like, yeah, I just love to talk about this, Brittany. Yeah, I would do it.
One of the favorite things in life that I like to talk about.
Which
but
is
I knew
so
you well
funny.
Enough, I could harass you about
yes,
that.
Yes, he was funny. He was just sarcastic. But no, he really had a heart want to share in order to help somebody else out who may be going through this or struggling with it or just want more knowledge about it. And I think that you did a really awesome job in that aspect.
Hope so.
So thanks so much for coming on
here
and just sharing your story.
Thanks for letting me be a part of your podcast. It's exciting.
No problem. Well, guys, thank you also for listening. And we'll see you back on here in 2 weeks. Y'all have a great day. Adios.